Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Movie Chatter. Although, like a newbie, I've got the wrong show logo up already. Look at that. I tell you, it's just going to be one of those shows this week. There we go. There's Movie Chatter. There's what you came here for, people. All right. Tonight, we are going to be discussing yet another recent release called The Protégé. Now, this one stars Maggie Q, Samuel L. Jackson, and Michael Keaton. So you got Nick Fury, Batman. Well, and Maggie Q just seems to do a lot of assassin roles, so I don't know. But we're going to go around the room here and give our thoughts. Lou, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this. I thought good casting. Maggie Q did a great job playing the role. And I was looking forward to it because the trailer looked really good, and the movie delivered, I think.
Okay. And Robin, what about you?
So, well, first of all, Samuel L., enough said.
Of course.
And then, of course, Maggie Q. And I got to tell you, Keaton brought it home. He was no slouch. So I liked it all the way around.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd watch it again, maybe on a really rainy afternoon. But we'll talk about why later.
Okay. All right. I agree with both of you. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a really strong performance by Keaton. I can't say one of his best because, of course, Keaton's had some really brilliant performances over the years. I think that the casting was spot on. I think the writing was good. The action was good. The pacing, a little slower than I think I would have expected from this type of movie. And it's not to say that the pacing was bad or that there was any problem with it. Just not what I was expecting. And I wonder if that perception might affect some people's enjoyment of the film. But I think that this is a pretty strong recommendation. So from this point on, we are going to get into spoilers. We will try not to like destroy the movie for anybody. But yeah, I mean, we're going to not hold back about different moments in the film. And you know, last episode, we covered Kate, which to me, it's a similar type of film, a different tone of film. But, you know, it's still got the female assassin. Kate was probably more of a revenge film specifically than this is. But I kind of feel like it was different.
It was shot differently too.
It didn't
have the same feeling to it, right? I mean, this one felt more grounded in reality. That was more comic book ish in terms of some of the over the top action scenes.
Yeah. You know, for years people used to make fun of me every time I talked about pacing. Pacing was my thing. And I think Lou, your thing is suspension of disbelief. Like that's got to be right for you, or you have a hard time enjoying the movie as well. We have to figure out what Robin's thing is. I don't know. It's got to have either Kenneth Branagh, Samuel L. Jackson, or Charlize Theron.
Nick Cage.
Well, he's not a real thing. He's fictitional.
Yeah, see, Robin, I remembered that.
Thank you.
Oh, I remembered it too. Lou. Me and two therapists managed to put it out of my mind entirely, but now it's back. Thanks. That was a lot of wasted money.
So for me, this film was also way more grounded in character development and having the characters move the story forward.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. It felt like the action was moving the story forward. Not that this was, you know, devoid of action
that Kate was devoid of character movement either. I mean, I think that Kate did better with that than a lot of similar movies do, but this definitely did that better. The character development way stronger in this. You're right.
And she kept cutting her hair. I mean, geez.
Yeah. Lou and I, we can relate to that, you know. Sometimes I leave it long like it is today, and sometimes I cut it shorter. And
I do the same thing.
Yeah,
so I braid it on one side.
Yeah. Oh yeah, braiding's hard sometimes.
It's really hard. Yeah.
Only for boys. Only.
And the worst thing is, like, you get it all done, and you realize it's not quite right, so you have to undo it and start over again. It just takes hours.
Ladies and gentlemen, my co-host digress.
Oh, sorry.
All right, so this has got 62% in Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score in Rotten Tomatoes is 82, and I got to go with the audience score on this one.
Nice.
I don't know. I'd give it, high 70s, low 80s. Like, I liked the movie a lot. It's never going to be one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I don't think I would rewatch it. And I'm not really sure why.
Probably not. Yeah.
I know why.
Okay.
I know why. Here's why. First of all, the director was really brilliant, Martin Campbell. But the writing, once you know the ending, it's hard to go back to the beginning and live through some of the pacing issues.
That's true. And there were pacing issues.
Now, that being said, the twists with each of the characters were fascinating, but they were fascinating enough that once you learn them, now you're going to be watching for them. Right?
Yeah.
You're going to be watching.
So what did you guys have a problem with as far as pacing goes?
It just felt like a slow burn. It felt like there were parts where the story didn't really move. There was no action, and I'm fine with that. I prefer character development over action any day. But there were moments where there was no action. There was no particular character development. There were certain dialogue scenes where it needed to tell a part of the story. It told that part of the story, and then it lingered longer than it needed to.
Agreed. And honestly, some of the scenes just with Maggie Q and
Keaton
were just too long.
They were excessive.
I was like, yawn. Really? Yawn.
Yes.
See,
and that's exactly it.
I don't mind slow pacing. I actually, Eric knows I like Meet Joe Black. So,
I love Meet Joe Black.
See, but so I didn't find the pacing slow. I thought it was methodical, and I thought it was timed out properly with the story tone.
I don't mind that it's slow. It bothers me when it's wasteful.
Okay.
I'm with Eric.
I like slow. I like slow pacing depending on the movie and what the movie needs to be doing. But in this case, and it was specifically, it wasn't just these scenes, but like Robin said, it was predominantly the Maggie Q and Michael Keaton scenes.
Yeah.
They lingered way longer than they needed to, and they could have moved along to the next scene. And it was almost like they were milking the experience of having those two actors on screen at the same time.
Because their banter was really, really witty and quippy and drew you in, it felt like there were like words said.
Yes.
Long pause.
Yes. It felt forced.
Words said.
See, I thought it felt, to me, I thought it felt like they were letting you steep in the moment and just kind of taking it in.
To me, it felt like two people in the same room, each giving monologues with enough spacing to let the other person in. There wasn't chemistry.
Okay.
Keaton's delivery was great. Maggie Q's delivery was great, but they didn't meld. They didn't have chemistry there. So all of these scenes, it was like they were reading their lines to get through the scene. And these dramatic pauses, I feel like, were inserted for the sake of having dramatic pauses. Not because the dramatic pause really gave you anything either. It was like it was supposed to create tension. But the problem is the synergy fell flat. So it kind of took away from the tension.
Yeah.
I feel like,
blame
Lou,
the writing.
You're seeing it the way they wanted you to see it. Mm. I saw it like, wow, they're really trying to force you to see it a certain way instead of just naturally letting that happen.
Okay. I mean, I saw it as I thought that, you know, we wanted to have this sexual tension between those two, but we also didn't want it to become a romance. So for me, that worked really well because it was not going to be a romance.
I'm grateful for that too. And you're right. I think that's what they were going for. But then to me, I never really believed that if they wanted to actually kill each other that badly, that they would also then end up in bed. And then they would also go back to wanting to kill each other again. And I get the just, okay, well, it's just sex. Like, it's not romance. It's not love. It just, you know, and that's great. But you don't just kill another human being for no reason. If you have a reason to kill him, you kill him. To end up in bed, like, you're at least going to kill him when you wake up in the morning. Like, there's still at some point, you've already made that decision. You don't just let him go home. So back to the suspension of disbelief thing. I mean, I don't know how your dates go, Robin, but, like, you know. So for me,
my husband is actually still alive. He recorded last night. We're good.
That's
We're
good. And this is why we record Random Chatter every Sunday night. That's our proof of life video, basically. But I mean, yeah, that was kind of my suspension of disbelief, that whole thing in the middle of the movie. I'm like, oh, no, that's not a real thing. No. Like, I get that you want that to happen, but, like, don't make it happen that way. That's just not real. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it didn't break the movie for me, but it definitely... It leaned me more toward the critic score than the audience score. I'll say that.
Well, those are the moments in the movie where I would go out, walk the dog for a couple miles, come back.
You're not supposed to have moments like that in a movie, Robin. It's supposed to be.
But, you know, that being said, I love the movie.
Yeah.
I like, I've seen the premise before, and that's fine. Martin Campbell directed Casino Royale.
Oh, okay.
So you can sort of see a lot of that in this movie. And the only thing I would say is I needed to see a little bit more Samuel L.
Yeah, but how much of that is just your Samuel L. fandom?
I mean, he had his part in the movie. I think it was fine. I don't think he needed to be any more in there.
You got more of him in this than you did Woody Harrelson in Kate.
Mm.
True.
Which, I mean, he played that role where he was, you know, mentor attached to her, and then that was it.
Yeah. And then, you know, he has that thing in movies where he gets shot early on, and then the hero has to go avenge him.
Mm.
Captain America 2. I saw another Woody Harrelson movie this past week. Well, what was that? Edge of 17. With Haley Steinfeld.
He
plays her high school teacher. And one of my favorite, I don't think it's his best performance per se, but it's one of my favorite characters of his. And he's not in the movie a lot, but there's the opening scene of the movie is great. And it's in the trailer. She comes in and sits down during his lunch break in the classroom and basically says, the acting on Haley Steinfeld's part for this scene is great. I'm done. I can't take this anymore. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna kill myself. I'm probably gonna go up to like an overpass and throw myself off of the overpass and hit like a dump truck or something. I'm not gonna hit a bus. I mean, that's just jerks do that. I don't want to make people watch. I just want it to be over with like quick. And she's going on and on and on. And Woody Harrelson's just looking at her just completely straight-faced. Wow, that's a lot to take in. You know, I was just sitting here on my lunch break, and he holds up this piece of paper he was writing. He said, writing a letter myself, dear faculty and staff, I'm sorry that I have to do this, but I can't take this anymore. I have this annoying student who keeps coming in on my lunch breaks, the only time of the day I have to myself and my only reason for living, and she's stolen that from me. And so I don't have a reason to go on. So I think this is the end. Thank you for my years of, you know, being here, blah, blah, blah. It's such a great scene. And he plays that role so well. But,
you know, I've been thinking about this since the last time we recorded, and I remember seeing that I will watch anything Woody Harrelson is in.
Edge of 17 is really good.
And I will. The problem is I don't actually know why. Like, I
don't
can't,
know either.
Like, he's very much an enigma for me. And so, unlike, you know, Samuel L., I know why I watch movies with him. I want to see how many times he can say, well, whatever it is he says over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think Ryan Reynolds covered it in one of Sam Jackson's films, actually.
Yeah.
Hitman's Bodyguard.
But I think, and on top of it, he came to acting at such a mature age that, you know, he carries
it. It gives you
that.
Hope that you could do the same, right?
Never. But, he's a little bit of an enigma for me.
Yeah.
For me, the acting was great. I'm going to blame a lot of the issues I had in the movie with sort of a combo between the writing and the editing.
The editing.
Which is unusual for me.
I think there are scenes that probably looked good on paper. And I mean, I gotta say the director's got a little bit of a hand in this too, I feel like, because I think the director didn't pull the right performance onto the actors, and then the performance that he did get, the editor should have chopped some of it down. The writing, I mean, you can work around writing with a good director and good editing, and the story itself isn't flawed. It's just there are certain scenes that drag on too long, but I mean, that's common in writing. Like, you get stuff that works well on the page, and then you go to deliver it, and you need that. That's why you have a director. You don't just have a bunch of instructions on a piece of paper. Anybody could get up and act that. Like, you need someone to say, okay, yeah, but no, it needs to have this feel to it. And you can use words on paper to get a feel of what you're trying to portray, but it's different in live action. So I can only blame the writer so much for this one. I think the director should have intervened. And when he didn't, I think the editor should have at least trimmed those scenes up a little better. I don't know. I mean, and we're nitpicking, right?
Yeah.
We're nitpicking. It's a good movie.
So in watching this, I was thinking about the fact that we've done a lot of female assassin movies lately.
Yeah, we really have.
And then looking at the whole list of them out there. Yeah, I mean, we've done, well, the
Old Guard.
Gunpowder Milkshake.
Gunpowder Milkshake.
Yep. Kate recently. But then I was thinking to myself, I said, this is a whole, we can make a whole series out of just this. We had Atomic Blonde lately. We had, and this reminded me a lot of Point of No Return.
Because Samuel L. Jackson.
In Point of No Return?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Was he?
No, I'm thinking the one with Gina Davis. That came out at the same time as Point of No Return. Point of No Return was Bridget Fonda.
The Long Kiss.
The Long Kiss
Goodnight.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
But I really liked Point of No Return. I thought this reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah.
The relationship between Bridget Fonda and Gabriel Byrne in that movie was a lot like this one.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. That's true. I don't know. In that one, it almost felt more. Abusive isn't the right word. Opportunistic. Like this.
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely taking advantage of her.
Yeah, in this one, I mean, they're exchanging gifts, and it's very much more like a family feeling. The other one was more like an employer / mentor, but definitely an employer first.
Yeah, I think that's how it started, but I think down the road it became more familiar.
Yeah, true.
I guess.
True.
In the beginning it was. What was it? Row 4, plot 7.
Right.
Still has your name on it. We're going to bring you there. But
it was a good movie.
It was. It was.
It was a really good movie. All right. I don't know. The thing about talking about this movie is I don't really think that there's a lot of individual scenes that warrant a particular amount of discussion. Like, it's a good movie with good character development, but there aren't a lot of deep themes. There aren't, You know, this isn't the Matrix where we can go off in any number of different directions and spend 3 hours just on a particular aspect of it. Like, it's a really good film, but like, I don't know what else to say about it, really.
And therein lies, I think, what the problem with a lot of the movies we've sort of tackled in the past couple of weeks is they are they're sort of appear on the surface, right? And they need to be, right? We need to have movies like that, though. They're pure escapism, and you know, you watch them for that.
And we kind of need that right now, right? I mean, the world is kind of crappy right now, no matter how you look at life. Like, I mean, you can be an optimist and understand that right now, at least, it's pretty rough compared to usual, right? So sometimes, movies like this can provide that escapism without getting too heavy.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a little bit like that. I'm, of course, heading into the holiday season, with the first holiday coming up quite shortly. And I have to tell you, though, I've realized how much I've been sitting in front of the television set, because, of course, we're entering into the Halloween season and rewatching my beloved Universal Monsters and all other things Halloween. And we've sort of burned through all of our Halloween favorites.
You're
already.
Done already?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Can you believe it? I know. I know.
Well, we are going to do Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yes.
So exciting.
And we also need to do Free Guy. It just came out on home video recently, and I love it.
Oh, my God. I love
and
it.
And really? Have you seen it and you love it? Not the reaction I was expecting, Lou.
I don't know. I thought she'd like it.
She'd
Everybody should like Ryan Reynolds movies.
Yeah. Well, we definitely have to talk about that then, too. So I think those are going to be our next two episodes of Movie Chatter. Today, as of recording this, is what, Tuesday the 12th.
Yes.
Netflix has released, I think, 5 or 6 more episodes of the movies that made us, and they're focusing on the Halloween movies. So specifically Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, etc. And it's been a good series so far.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that.
Yeah.
Etc. was my favorite movie out of that bunch.
I understand.
Well, I think you got to look at it this way, though, too, especially when you think about those movies in terms of what they are for the movie itself, not the franchise.
Mm.
The movies, the first movie in all those franchises, were really good. And, you know, for a horror movie, they were excellent horror movies.
I would say the first three in Nightmare on Elm Street were good.
I'd have to go back and watch it. I don't remember them that well, to tell you the truth. But, I mean, the first one, obviously, groundbreaking for what it did. Yeah. The first Halloween, the first two Halloweens were good because they were basically back-to-back. The second movie picked up right where the first movie left off. Like, the character is in a position at the end of the movie one and picks up in that position in movie two type thing.
Yeah.
And then Friday the 13th, the first couple, maybe the first two or three, were pretty good in that. But then it just got silly stupid with, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan and, you know, Friday the 13th in
Jason
space.
Jason in space.
And like, you know, yeah, I'm like, you know, it's ridiculous. But the first ones of those movies were excellent movies.
For their time. And for what they were trying to be, too. Like, I have no interest in a slasher movie, but Nightmare on Elm Street was different, right? Because it's this concept of that you can get killed in your sleep, and so you can't fall asleep. And so that adds, like, a whole different level
spoilers.
To it. Spoilers. Yeah, I'm sorry I spoiled a really recent movie for you guys.
40-year-old movie, yeah. But no, you're absolutely right. That movie was excellent because you didn't know if it was real or dream. It didn't have good rewatchability. I mean, it wasn't like you could watch it again and get the same reaction out of it. But the first time watching it, you're like, oh my God, this is what is going on?
And at
here?
The time, you know, it was a brand new concept. Like, nobody did that sort of thing. So, I'm mostly with Robin on this. But here's the thing, though, for this Netflix series, it's not even that I care about the original films. It's that, you know, they were impactful on pop culture. They were impactful on the industry. I'm curious about how they got made. And that's what the Netflix documentary is about. And it's a really well-presented series in general, too. This is like the third season they're doing. So just in time for Halloween. And then also today, a trailer. Robin's going to roll her eyes at me. A trailer for the upcoming Scream movie that's going to be coming out, sadly, in January of next year, which seems like a weird time to release it. But listen, the first, back to what you were saying, Lou, about the first in franchises, I thought the first Scream movie was good. It was meta. It was unpredictable. I mean, you couldn't have predicted the ending.
Although there was a bunch of movies released at the same time that were very similar.
Were there?
Because that was around the same. Not similar, yes, but similar in the fact they had all young actors
doing
it.
I know what you did last summer.
I know what you did last summer was there. Yeah. Okay. And there's a remake of that coming out, too. I saw a trailer for that before No Time to Die.
Not happy about that one.
And I'm like, really? Why are we redoing this? Okay, whatever.
But Scream is not a remake. It's actually, it takes place like a generation later. Yeah, really? They're bringing back Courtney Cox, David Arquette, and Neve Campbell.
Okay.
Yeah, and the trailer doesn't look bad. Honestly, I watched it today, and I was expecting this is going to be trash. It looks okay.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, we may not cover it here because I know Robin's not going to want to cover that one.
I took a day off that day.
Yeah, I know, and that's okay.
I filled out my car.
Of all the things we're going to force you to watch, we're not going to make you watch that one. We'll save it for something like Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
Cannibal the Musical
by Grammy and Tony and Emmy Award winning producers and Oscar nominated. They're almost EGOT. Almost.
Look. I thought you were going to tell a joke there. Grammy, Tony, and Emmy walked into the bar, but no.
Watch it. I'm going to make you watch another one that was also Oscar nominated.
Uh-uh.
South Park the Musical.
I don't care what Oscar
was nominated for Best Song.
I don't like that. I think I've actually seen that.
Yeah.
It wasn't nominated for the movie. It was nominated for the song.
Right. So we have to watch it for the song. She likes musicals. You like musicals,
I'll listen to the song.
I'll sing it.
No.
He just said he'd listen.
We just recently rewatched Young Frankenstein and I found myself laughing hysterically.
Never seen it. Not my thing. Yeah, I should at some point.
It's true. It has a monster in it.
Good movies aren't your thing?
Yeah, good movies are not Eric's thing. Hence, Cannibal the Musical and Kung Pao something.
I will give you points for that transition, Lou. I mean, that was smooth. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
I feel like there was something else I was going to bring up that we should watch.
Mel Brooks. I mean, come on.
I know.
Right? I usually don't like him.
Yeah, I usually don't like him either. I don't.
Really?
It caught me at the right time.
Oh, my God. Spaceballs. Blazing Saddles. Oh, my God.
Even Spaceballs. I love Spaceballs, but you have to admit it's heavy-handed. It's like, just set up this punchline. Now set up that punchline. Now set up that punchline. I love it. I love Spaceballs.
That's what makes it so good.
Yeah. No, it doesn't make it good. It makes it enjoyable. And there's a big difference, Lou.
Wow.
You can admit that. It doesn't have to be good to be enjoyable.
Right,
It's enjoyable. Very enjoyable.
These are both good and enjoyable. History of the World Part 1.
Yeah.
I bring you these 15. 10 commandments.
Okay, well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Movie Chatter. We're going to be back next week covering Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Why? Because we like you. No, copyright. We're on YouTube now. We can't do that. We don't want the House of Mouse coming down on us. That would be bad. People don't survive that.
We're living in the House of Mouse, dude.
Oh, that was a good episode of South Park where Mickey Mouse goes around and just like bludgeons the crap out of people for, what was it? Oh, the Jonas Brothers.
So
anyway, So yeah.
Next week is my adorable Universal Monster.
Right? Montage. Yes.
Right. Yes.
Collaboration.
Yes.
Mosaic.
Yes.
Yes. That is going to be our classic monster thing. I kind of wanted to watch Aliens this season. The sci-fi horror thing. Haven't watched that in a long time. I think it's overdue.
No. We watched Alien 2 last night.
That's Alien 2 is Aliens. Like with the S. Yeah.
The plural.
We watched it last night.
Yeah.
Alien was the better horror movie, though.
Mm-hmm. See, and for me, Alien, the pacing was... It's good. I mean, Ridley Scott and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good, but Aliens was just, it's a different movie, a different type of movie.
Oh, yeah. Different,
James
different
Cameron.
Movie. Aliens was fantastic. Yeah. The best Alien movie of the bunch, but Alien was the better horror.
If you want to go with the purity of it being horror, yes. But I got more scared from Aliens than I did Alien.
Did we watch the same movie?
I don't know. Did yours have them going to a colony on a planet and finding a little girl who's in hiding? Yeah, that was the second one.
Okay. Yeah. That wasn't scarier than the first one.
When you're a little kid, it is. I kind of fell asleep during the first one, the first time I watched it.
Alien. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand.
And then I watched Aliens, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is intense.
Well, yeah. I mean, so Aliens, I watched in high school. And it was
I was gonna say this movie, your third time returning to college.
So this movie's amazing. It was all about the military and they're fighting the bugs. It was awesome. Yeah,
but it was scary because even the military has no chance. And we're talking like the guns and stuff they had. Oh my gosh! And they were just getting wiped out like crazy. And there were so many more aliens. Like in the first one, it was like there's what, two, and in this one there's like 6 million, and it's like.
There's only one alien in the first
one. Okay. Well, whatever.
You didn't. It was like the whole thing of the first time you see that, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff. There was things going on you didn't understand. Right. And learning about it was like, oh my God. And even down to, and I've said this before on a show, and I've said it many times because I love this scene, of the way they shot it. That scene where the first chestburster comes out, they didn't tell the actors in the scene what was going to happen, except for, was it John Hurt was the guy that busted out of his chest? I forget now, but they told him, obviously, he knew what was going on. Nobody else did. They just said, okay, something's going to go on at dinner. Just go with it.
Yeah, no, that was brilliant.
And the reaction on her face was just amazing.
Absolutely.
The woman got blood spattered in her face, and she looked absolutely horrified.
Intense scene.
Yep.
Absolutely. I'm down.
And, you were with the Z's on that
Not
one?
That
you were
scene,
just like,
no. But the rest of it, I mean, one scene does not a movie make.
Really?
Yeah.
although Paul Reiser was really good in the second one.
Oh, my gosh. You know, he actually, people were so mean to him after that movie. He was telling a story about some old lady on an airplane once who just, like, started, like, going off on him. And how could you kill that poor family?
That's
died,
awesome.
Blah, blah, blah. Like, he had to get a stewardess to come, like, get him a different seat and everything, and... Yeah, he was getting accosted by people after that for a few years.
That's awesome.
Hysterical.
Yeah, even after Mad About You, it's like, no, he's like he's that guy. He's never been to
Mad
space.
Mad About You ended horribly, so, you know.
I don't think I ever watched the very end. We're kind of going off on...
Yeah, we are going off.
I mean, talk about tangents. Wow, okay. Speaking of things are bringing back, Mad About You.
No.
Yeah. Really?
You can't. It's kaput.
Like new actors redoing the same thing, or
it's like Suzanne Plachet wakes up next to Bob Newhart. What are you doing?
That was brilliant.
I don't remember what they said they're gonna do. I don't really care.
I had the strangest dream.
Anyhow, that's gonna do it for this episode of Movie Chatter. Thank you for hanging out with us. And we will be back next Tuesday night covering Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And even if you haven't watched it, and even if you don't have a way to watch it, I'm sure you can find it somewhere. But even if you can't, you should probably come listen to us talk about it anyway, because I'm sure it's going to be a goofy, silly episode that you're going to enjoy. So be here next Tuesday night. If you want to watch it live, go to randomchatter.com/YouTube, and you can hang out with us in the chat room stuff. It's going to be about 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. And otherwise, stick around Sunday night as well. We're going to be doing Force Chatter, covering the latest Star Wars news, and Random Chatter, where we are going to be reviewing stuff. We have a couple of news items. Maybe we'll have a little bit of a news show this week. You know, that's one of the hardest things about COVID, when you're podcasting covering movie news and there just aren't any movies. It really kind of puts a damper on that. So, but we're going to have stuff to cover Sunday night as well. So that's going to do it for this week. Until next time.